It was in June of 1985. I was in the midst of a long-awaited, eagerly anticipated, and much enjoyed pastoral internship in Kenya. Halfway between Nairobi and Mombasa, having been seconded to the Presbyterian Church of East Africa with my supervising pastor, Charles Kavisho, we were traveling around to various churches and church mission starts by the Presbyterian Church. And we came to the town called Voi. Now, I had been looking forward to coming to Voi because everywhere I went in Kenya with the church and in the market and other places, people would say to me, well, first they would start speaking Swahili, and I didn't have that facility. I was mostly with the Kikuyu peoples. But they would start speaking to me and they would say, you know, you look like a Taita. I didn't know what they were talking about. The Taita are one of the tribes in Kenya, most of whom come from the town and the upper regions of Voi. So I couldn't wait to get to Voi to see who I look like. You can imagine, right? All these twins, Anthony twins running around, that's scary. But there we were in the town, and then one of the churches had a mission and outreach to the school, to a school that was located on the top of a mountain. And so, following my pastoral supervisor, Charles Kavisho, we went up, trekked up, and made our way up the mountain. The vehicle we had could only get so far. You had to walk the rest of the way. And on that particular day, they were having chapel service at the school, as was their practice. And I was invited to come and join, and through the interpretation of my pastoral supervisor, Charles, who would speak in English and he would interpret. And I was struck. I almost couldn't find the words to speak because the people in the market and the churches and everywhere that I met were right. These people look like me. Isn't that strange? They actually did. And when I came, they thought, oh, a long-lost Taita. Well, I don't know for sure. But what happened to me in that chapel was something that I don't speak of very often. After speaking and I sat down, and then the children's choir, the children came forward and they started to sing and to drum and to dance. The harmonies, if you've heard of African harmony and call and response and the drumming and the movement, and the sunlight was shining through into that chapel. And something came over me that I have only been able to attribute to God's grace and glory that did a number of things. I had been struggling in that pastoral internship with what I was witnessing. On one hand, the joy and the great faith of people, but the starvation that was going on at the northern part in Lodwar and Turkana region of Kenya. The poverty that we came across, the difficulties that people were under, the pain that we witnessed as we traveled from village to village and town to town. Struggling with that and the sense that I felt so confirmed in my ancestral identity. The first time I have been back in my, well, you may say my country of origin, ultimately, for my ancestors had been taken forcibly and brought to Barbados where I was born, but back on the continent of Africa. And I was overwhelmed. Overwhelmed personally, overwhelmed by what I was witnessing. And in that moment in that chapel, as the children sang and danced and drummed and the light shone, I felt almost lifted out of my body. I felt this encompassing of God's Spirit and a deep peace that spoke into my heart and my soul and confirmed, you are where you are supposed to be. You will leave Voi and you will continue your ministry with the people. Even speaking of it, I know I cannot even do justice to the experience. But I decided to share that this time with you, because although a familiar text as we come back again and again and again, there's something that struck me about this text even more forcefully than other times I've preached on it. It is, what does it mean to listen to Jesus? And in fact, when you look at how it is written in the Greek, it is even more telling, because it is not a static command by God. It is something that we are supposed to keep on doing. The tense in the Greek use of the word akouete means to keep on listening. It's not just an instantaneous thing. We listen every moment of every day. What is Jesus, the Spirit of Christ, speaking into our lives that we are to be about now? And so I listened to this text and I looked at it again and I realized that we can be so distracted by the brilliance of it all. I can't tell you the number of times it has been my privilege as a pastor to hear people come and tell me about profound spiritual experiences about which they cannot speak. They don't want to tell anyone because they say they will think I'm crazy. You are the only one I can tell this to because I have faith you're going to understand what I want to say. Why is it that our society and our world is so skeptical of the profound experiences that people have to the point where they are ashamed and afraid to share them with those whom they know and whom they love, even their family members? They'll call the ROH for me. They'll have me committed if I tell them what I experience from God. Nobody will believe me. There are many clues in this particular text that tells us that Jesus was intentionally drawing that small circle out of the large group of disciples again to instruct them, to teach them, to mentor them, to form them. Peter, James, and John, come with me. Come up the mountain. And there they witness something. They experience something. Annie Dillard, in her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, she tells a story about doctors who were performing early cataract surgery in Europe. And on one such occasion, the doctors removed the bandages from a young girl. And when they did that, she opened her eyes and she said, "I see a tree with lights in it, sparkling." And Annie Dillard recounts that those words challenge her in her own journey as she tumultuously has been traveling the spiritual path, as it were. And she writes, "It was for this tree I searched through the peach orchards of summer, in the forests of fall and down winter and spring for years. Then one day I was walking along Tinker Creek thinking of nothing at all, and I saw the tree with the lights in it. I saw the backyard cedar where the morning doves roost, charged and transfigured. I stood on the grass with the lights in it, grass that was holy fire, utterly focused and utterly dreamed. It was less like seeing than like being for the first time seen, knocked breathless by a powerful glance. The vision comes and goes, mostly goes, but I live for it." I could relate to those words. It was in that moment in the chapel on the mountain outside of Boy that I felt seen, confirmed in my identity, struck by a powerful glance from God. That is what the disciples experienced. They experienced this brilliance of Jesus transfigured, something of the glory of God. And all of the clues were there that Mark is trying to help his readers and us make sense of it. After 6 days, the people would have heard that. Ah, that reminds us of Moses, when Moses went up on the mountain and God came and overshadowed him with glory and brilliance. Elijah and Moses represent the law and the prophets. That all the testimony of God confirms and commingles at this moment in Jesus saying, here is the one standing before you that is the purpose for all of the way I have leaned into the world to redeem it and to bless it. Here. Don't be distracted by the brilliance. Don't be distracted by Moses and Elijah. All of this is to confirm that this Jesus is my son. Now, keep on listening to him. And we ask ourselves, what are they to listen to? Remember, as I introduced the text, that framing this text at the beginning and at the end is Jesus bearing witness to the struggle and the violence and the suffering in the world. I must suffer, says Jesus, but I will rise again. But the glory does not come except by through suffering. And he is preparing his disciples for the work and the journey of what it means to identify with those whom he has come to serve. Immediately following this text, when they return, as it were, when they come down from the mountain, the disciples, the ones that had remained, were struggling to help a man whose son was possessed to try to heal him, and they couldn't do it. The struggle and the suffering, the man was concerned about his son because he said the spirit in him throws him into the fire, throws him into the water to try to drown him. He was in pain and agony to have his child help. Framing both sides of this story, here is this brilliance. But the brilliance is meant to focus our attention and our ears on what Jesus is saying. Because just before, when Jesus said to his disciples that he must suffer, Peter said, no, I'm not interested in that. And Jesus has to rebuke him and say, you're more interested in human things than the things of God. Now this is meant to get our attention so that we listen to what he's been saying all along and will continue to say. Look at the light that is streaming through. Let it remind you of God's favor, of God's desire to get through, to penetrate all of the shadows of our lives from which we try to hide. Some people want to dismiss this as a myth or some kind of crazy story. It's interesting that in 2 Peter, and you can look this up yourself, Peter, the writer of that particular text, refers to this transfiguration experience. Says this is what happens to counter the argument about vain utterances and cleverly invented stories. It is saying, we experience this. This is not an invented story. This really happened. How we make sense of it is the key. And God commands us by saying, listen to him. You remember the hymn, immortal, invisible God, only wise. In light inaccessible, hid from our eyes, most blessed, most glorious, the Ancient of Days, almighty, victorious, thy great name we praise. It is an invitation to praise God by how we obey and follow Jesus. Keep on listening to him. What is it that we are to be listening to? What is it that blinds us like the disciples from actually hearing what Jesus is saying? Ched Myers, a scholar who has written on Mark, has a book called Binding the Strong Man, and he writes, after all, in Mark, the true impediments to discipleship have nothing to do with physical impairment, but with spiritual and ideological disorders. Having eyes you cannot see, having ears you cannot hear. So what might it look like if we keep on listening to Jesus? What are some of the examples we have seen in our life and in previous generations when people have listened to Jesus, that have had mountaintop experiences and not been distracted? Think of it, for instance, as an example, as a way into this. What happens when we gather on July 1st at nighttime on Parliament Hill? What happens? Fireworks. Fireworks. Brilliant. And every year, our family would go, like many of you would go down and watch and wonder, what new are they going to do this year? Just in the last few years, they had the wonderful explosions and then the multiple ones inside of those. And now, for the first time last year, I saw explosions inside of explosions. Wow. That'll get your attention. But think of it this way. Here we are distracted by the beauty, and I love fireworks and so forth. But what do those fireworks represent? What are we celebrating on July 1st? Canada Day. What does it mean to be a Canadian? What does it mean to live responsibly one's citizenship? What does it mean to be concerned about the values that this country prides itself on? What does it mean to embrace the other and those who come to these lands? What does it mean to be Canadian? So the fireworks are wonderful, but they can be distracting if we do not also follow up on what it means to be celebrating Canada Day and what Canadian means. Do you understand? That's what's going on. This brilliance can distract the disciples. They were terrified. But they're meant to focus on what lays behind this disclosure of God, both in brilliance and word, about this Jesus and this Jesus' message. Martin Luther King in Memphis on the night before he was assassinated appeared in a service and quoted the experience of Moses. He wasn't sure what he was going to say. In fact, he was so tired, he didn't really want to go. But his friends around him said, "You've got to go, the people have come." He was in Memphis to support and encourage the strike by the sanitation workers for decent pay. And these sanitation workers were white, black, brown. It wasn't all about black and white. He was about poverty issues and economic justice also. And he was there to lend his life and his voice and his mission and his message to their cause. And the night before he was assassinated, he got up, and it was a stormy night. And he said, "We've got some difficult days ahead, but it doesn't matter with me now because I've been to the mountaintop. And I've looked over and I've seen the promised land. And I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get there. We will get to the promised land. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord." In a few hours, an assassin's bullet shattered his jaw and killed him. This is an example of what it means to keep on listening to Jesus. Although through threat, through attempted murder, that he was stabbed very close to the heart. Through imprisonment, dogs set upon him, fire hoses, all of that suffering of what Jesus spoke about, Martin kept on listening to Jesus. Stay on track. What you are doing is right. It is just. Seek to bring the peoples together. Seek to speak out against economic injustice. Seek to see the political will of the land change in terms of its preference for militarism. Seek to listen to me and put that into order. That's what it means to keep on listening, even after having a mountaintop experience. What does it mean today for us to keep on listening to Jesus? In light of all the outrage and the massacring taking place in Syria, what does it mean? Could it mean that we listen to the incisive perception of Jesus about how the forces in society privilege self-interest over other things? For the international community wagged its finger a couple of weeks ago when the UN Security Council brought before a motion, and Russia and China vetoed it and waved their finger at them. How could they do this? What's wrong with them? It's about self-interest. China does $2.2 billion annually in business with Syria. The Russians supply Syria with arms. And Putin is concerned about his own security also. He doesn't want to send any signals about helping Libya because he knows what lies for him, awaits him at home. But we need to be careful. Because last year in Bahrain, the people trying to gather the momentum of the Arab Spring also rose up, seeking a releasing of the dictatorial stringencies under which they lived. Saudi Arabia, backed by the U.S., sent their troops and quelled that. Because Saudi Arabia and Bahrain are friends of the United States. Self-interest. If a UN motion had come before sanctioning them, I bet you U.S. and other countries in the West would have vetoed it too. It's not about shaming those countries like Russia and China. It's about listening to Jesus' wisdom and seeing that self-interest rules the day. Self-interest over compassion and justice and what is right. Keep on listening to Jesus. God commands. What does it mean to listen to Jesus in the heartbreaking tragedies even closer to home? I have permission to share this, and I thought it would be important for us as a community of faith to know how our prayers and support really impact the people that we pray for. Some of you know Rob and Mary Ellen in our congregation, a young couple. They were so exuberant and delighted to be pregnant, and they discovered that they were having twins. Great joy filled that household. I remember the sparkle and delight in Rob's voice when he called me and told me. Last Friday, those twins, Addison and Elliot, were born prematurely, aged 23 weeks, lived for 2 hours, and died in their parents' arms. What does it mean to listen? Listen to Jesus. Listen for the word and the voice of Jesus. As I spoke at length with Rob, and he talked about just the shock and the great devastation that this is, and we can imagine. But what it meant to him to have received calls and prayers and support and encouragement. And somehow the conversations that we had about a year and a half ago about the place of God in our lives despite what, somehow he held on to that, and that's giving them some hope, some relief, some peace. In the midst of the violence and the suffering of which Jesus spoke, this brilliance confirms, listen to Jesus. Listen to the comforting words of Jesus. Listen to the invitation into mystery where we have no answers, but we have accompaniment. Where we as a community support one another in prayer and love and joy. I was listening intently for Jesus' voice and wisdom. And Friday evening, when I was called out to the hospital to come alongside a young University of Ottawa student who had checked himself into the psychiatric ward because he was suicidal. Last week, one of his resident's friends on the same floor hung himself. And the depression with which this young man was struggling just went off the edge, and he knew he was this close to doing the same thing. Reached out and called for help. Spent 2 hours talking and listening and supporting, listening to Jesus, listening to what wisdom, what comfort, what insight, what hosting could I render. Jesus gathered the disciples and said, "Don't talk about this that you have experienced until the Son of Man is raised. Don't distract people with this brilliance. Get back to work. Get back to work coming alongside this world that I love. Get back to work transforming injustice into justice. Get back to work helping those who are dispossessed of hope and life to receive what is necessary. Keep on listening. You and I are called to keep on listening for what might Jesus be saying to you and to me about our lives and about how we minister to others. Opportunities abound for the grace of God to be poured into. You and I, God has chosen to do that. Keep on listening to Jesus. Amen."